Welcome to Chasing the Yield. My name's Kevin Bay. This is episode number 37 for January 10th, 2022. We are done with the first 52nd of the year. I'm not even saying that right. We are 1/52nd into 2022. So, well, 1 week down, 51 more to go, and then we're into the next year. I'm getting ahead of myself, aren't I? Today, things are kind of crazy today on this Monday. Let me see here. Let me get into the Wall Street Journal because the market is not doing well today. Oops. I should have had this already pulled up, but I failed. Okay, so here we go. Today, it's recovering a little bit, but markets are down today, as you can see here, if you're watching on YouTube. I'm not even clicking on the right thing. Okay, view all market data. There you go. Dow Jones is down. I'm recording today a little bit late. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Eastern time. Dow is down 0.79%, 0.8%. S&P is down 0.84%. NASDAQ is down a little over 1%. So things are not looking good for today, but things were up quite a bit last week, so who knows? I mean, everything's up in the air. Just a reminder, you're listening to this for the first time, you can go and donate to the show. You can. There's a big red donate button on the show notes on the website. And also, this is a value for value podcast where you can stream Bitcoin micropayments. And I've got a link on the site that explains all of that. Another sip of coffee. All right. Because I'm so late, I'm a little messed up here. Well, let's just get right into things. Microsoft. Microsoft is losing talent to Meta. There was a story in the Wall Street Journal this morning talking about competitors have been snapping up people with experience developing Microsoft's HoloLens, augmented reality, sometimes offering double their salaries, said former Microsoft employees. The Microsoft Augmented Reality Group employs around 1,500 people, they said. The LinkedIn profiles of more than 70 former employees on the HoloLens team show they've left Microsoft in the past year. More than 40 joined Meta, formerly known as Facebook, which is making a big push into alternate reality tech, the LinkedIn profiles show. The departed staffers include some longtime leaders of the team. Charlie Hahn, who was responsible for taking customer feedback for HoloLens, left over the summer to join Meta. Josh Miller, who worked in the display team, became the display director at Meta in recent months. Mr. Hahn and Mr. Miller didn't respond to requests for comment about the moves. My question is, are people really into the metaverse at all? You know, haven't we already gone through this when World of Warcraft and Second Life? Does anybody even remember Second Life? I never hear it mentioned whenever they go through these stories about the metaverse. And Second Life, to me, seemed just like what was being proposed by Mark Zuckerberg and Meta. You know, a virtual world where you create an avatar, you can be whatever the hell you want, and we're buying up real estate, and you could buy advertising. You know, like there would be a virtual billboard someplace, and you can, you know, advertise there, or, you know, Nike could sell virtual shoes. So I don't know what is different with Meta than there was with, or the metaverse as there was with Second Life, other than maybe the, you know, Oculus virtual reality headset. So other than just looking at it on the screen, you're wearing this thing on your head and you're, I guess, more immersed in the virtual world. But do people really want that? I don't quite get it or understand it. You know, but maybe it's just me. You know, my background was in computer science. I do have a computer science degree. And I've always been into computers since I was about 14 years old. So I'm not like a Luddite by any means, you know. I used to be an early adopter for a lot of technology, for phones, for computers, you know, laptop computers. I was one of the first people I ever saw carry around a laptop computer. And I was one of the first people among my cohort having a car phone at the time, you know, a phone built into your car. I never had the big brick 1980s brick cell phone, but I did have one in my car. NEC, I think it was an NEC phone. But so I'm not opposed to new technologies or using new technologies. It's just it has to make sense, and I really do not understand wasting time in the metaverse. You know, and I've also been an early adopter of video games. I've been playing video games since Pong. You know, when we bought the a Pong console out of Sears, and then we had the Atari, and you know, on and on and on, all through Xbox. Now I don't really play Xbox anymore either, because to me everything, the whole video game genre became repetitive. You know, just more complex games, you know, but you're still shooting things up, so it took me forever to set things up before I play the game, and I get bored setting things up. I just want to play. So I know I keep going off on these little side tangents, but just as background in myself is that I'm not a Luddite, so I'm not seeing why anybody would be wasting a ton of time and money in the metaverse. You know, I understand why Microsoft employees would move there. So, you know, they're getting paid more. So that's all fine. And I guess if the metaverse fails, you know, these are engineers and things, so they can move back and forth, and I don't think there'll be any shortage of jobs for them. Walgreens raised its forecast and posted higher sales and profits. The Deerfield, Illinois drugstore chain said sales and profits rose in its latest quarter, and raised its full-year forecast as demand for COVID-19 vaccines and at-home tests continued to draw customers to its stores. Walgreens said it administered 15.6 million COVID-19 vaccinations in the latest quarter, which ended November 30, and provided 6.5 million COVID-19 tests, including over-the-counter at-home tests. The chain said it now expects to administer 30 million vaccines this year, up from 25 million as booster shots get approved for more groups. That's good for Walgreens, and if you're a stockholder in Walgreens, that should be good for you, which I am. AT&T, they exceed expectations for HBO Max subscribers. The company also added roughly 270,000 fiber subscribers in the fourth quarter and ended the period with about 73.8 million total HBO Max and HBO subscribers globally. The HBO figures came in above the outlook for 70 million to 73 million subscribers that AT&T had offered back in September. I do not subscribe to HBO Max. I also do not, AT&T is also not my ISP, even though I could get it, the fiber, AT&T fiber I can get in my house. It's just, to me, the speed versus cost, you know, just didn't work out. Cable still much cheaper and much faster speeds. I shouldn't be talking down my own investment, should I? Genuine Parts Company completed an acquisition of Cayman Distribution Group. Yahoo News, Genuine Parts Company, a leading distributor of automotive and industrial replacement parts, announced today that its wholly owned subsidiary, Motion Industries, has completed the purchase of Cayman Distribution Group for a purchase price of approximately $1.3 billion in cash effective January 3rd, 2022. KDG is a leading power transmission, automation, and fluid power industrial distributor and solutions provider with operations throughout the U.S., providing electromechanical products, bearings, power transmission, motion control, and electrical and fluid power components to MRO and OEM customers. Headquartered in Bloomfield, Connecticut, KDG's 1,700 employees serve more than 50,000 customers. What's an MRO? I do not know, and I didn't bother to look it up. Some making changes there. So now I'm going to get into the title. I titled this episode Economic Confusion for 2022. And the reason I did is there's a story in the Wall Street Journal. The headline was, or is, U.S. companies are thriving despite the pandemic, or because of it. Revenues, profit margins have surpassed late 2019 levels for most public companies. Bigger firms have fared better than smaller ones. This was published on New Year's Day, or at least posted online on New Year's Day. And the beginning of the story goes like this. In the Wall Street Journal, it says, nearly 2 years after the coronavirus pandemic brought much of the U.S. economy to a halt, public companies are recording some of their best ever financial results. Profit growth is strong. Most company sales are higher than where they were before. The liquidity crunch many feared in 2020 never materialized, leaving companies with sizable cash cushions. The stock market ended 2021 near record highs, and far fewer public companies filed for bankruptcy in 2021 than in the years before the pandemic. So you got these big companies doing quite well. Let's see here. So the story moves on. I should have highlighted this, and I didn't. Let's see. So government programs provided funding for businesses, helping them keep workers, while enhanced unemployment benefits and direct aid to consumers also kept income up. The support to households was greater than in the past, so that really helped fuel consumer spending, said Kathy Bostyanchik, Bostyanchik, I think that's how you pronounce her name, U.S. financial economist at Oxford Economics. She said that's what fueled revenue, growth, and profits. The rebound is real for smaller companies, but it's the biggest companies that have fared the best. Let's see here. The biggest companies are also rebounded more quickly than smaller ones, even as uncertainty deepened over COVID-19. Let's see. Hold on. Move around. Let's see. Ulta, the groups. I'm not very prepared today. So, in essence, how the story goes is that very large companies did fairly well during the pandemic, largely because of government funding of everything. They funded on both ends. They funded both on the supply and the demand side of the economy. On the supply side, for manufacturers, for businesses, you know, they got a hold of all kinds of aid to keep people working, the payroll protection program. You know, on the other hand, on the demand side, consumers, you know, people that were out of work or just people in general, got a lot of aid from the federal government, shipping them money so they could still afford to get some necessities while perhaps they were out of work or had to stay home due to, you know, COVID positive tests or, you know, work shutting down because of COVID. And at least I don't remember a time, I'm 55, so I don't remember a time in my life where the federal government pumped so much money into the system that propped up both ends of the system. And if they do that, I mean, what kind of economy do we actually have for all of 2020 and 2021? It's kind of like kept at an artificial level, and it has me a little bit worried for 2022. And I'll tell you why. I also follow this website, and loosely, I don't go there every day, but I do check in from time to time. It's called Shadow Stats, and you can go to shadowstats.com. And on this site, he has economic information and charts of how things used to be calculated. And the prime example, or one of the prime charts that he tracks or that he makes, is unemployment. And he has unemployment as it used to be calculated prior to 1994, so prior to the Clinton administration. And I'm gonna okay. just a, another side. This is a podcasting 2.0 compatible podcast. So you will be able, you'll have access to transcripts and chapters and chapter images. And I didn't do it last week, but I promised this week because I have these charts to look at. And I will put these charts in, not just in the show notes, but also if you're watching this or if you're listening to this on a podcasting 2.0 compatible app, you should be able to see these charts as I talk about them. So the unemployment rate right now, the official number is, I think it was 3.9%, the last one that was reported. He has numbers here published as of January 7th. So if you're looking at this chart, you have a red line, a gray line, and a blue line. The red line is are the official unemployment numbers as they get reported out to the media by the government. And that's the one that's, you know, 3.9% or so. Then you have the U6, which includes other information, and that's the gray line on this chart. And that is, let me see here. I can't see exactly what the number is, but it's somewhere between 5 and 10%. It looks like somewhere around 7% or so. And then you have the blue line. The blue line is unemployment as it used to be calculated prior to 1994, and that number is somewhere around 24, he's got the number here exactly, 24.5%. 24.5% of people, of working age people not working. So, you know, it right now, when you see the unemployment numbers, they don't include people who are no longer in, they're no longer participating in the labor market. They, you know, it's the labor participation rate. And so they've taken that out. So the number of people that are no longer actively looking for work, they're not included in the unemployment numbers anymore. So 24.5%, that is higher, you know, if those numbers are true, it's higher than where we were during the Great Recession of 2008. You know, 2008 through what, 2010. And the gap is getting wider between all of these numbers. When you're looking at this chart, and you can see that back during the Great Recession of 2008 through 2010, the unemployment, you know, the official number was somewhere up around 10%. Where the shadow stats number was somewhere in the mid-20s. So now, and you bring that forward to today, where shadow stats shows our unemployment numbers are higher than where we should have been around 2010, while the official number is well below that. You know, the official number is 3.9%, and back in 2010 it was 10%. Something is not right. Something is definitely wrong here, and it feels wrong. I mean, when you read the regular news, and you see the coverage of employment, unemployment, jobs, how businesses can't find people to work, but yet the things just don't make sense. Unemployment numbers seem to be, or the people on unemployment assistance filing for unemployment, that keeps dropping, but I haven't seen like the raw numbers on how many people are on unemployment still as compared to before. It just feels wrong. Then you go to, he has inflation charts too, and inflation, the way it was calculated back in 1990, shows inflation is above 10%, maybe around 11%, where today the official number is somewhere around 6.8, 6.9 maybe. And then if you go back to the way we used to calculate inflation back in, around 1980, between 1980 and 1990, so prior, yeah, somewhere around there, inflation is somewhere around 15%. That brings us into the stagflation era of the late 70s. Now, interest rates obviously are not high, and the Fed keeps talking about raising interest rates. But back in the late 70s, okay, I was just a kid, and I remember the interest rates being high, just because I had savings accounts and stuff, and you could actually save some money back then because the interest that would be paid on your saving, your passbook savings account was significant. On the other hand, if you were trying to get a mortgage, like I bought my first house in 1988, and our mortgage, I think at the time, oh no, yeah, 88, at the time was somewhere around 11%, while people right now are around 3%. So something doesn't ring true here. If we live by inflation as calculated by 1980, we're in a little bit of trouble here. Also, there's another chart here, and I'm not exactly sure on it, but as I read it, it's the money supply. And it shows, I guess, the amount of money in the system. And you can see this one gray line that is supposed to be the old way of calculating money in the system. And it's above this 100% mark. There is an enormous amount of money in the system. Hold on, I got knocked offline somehow. I don't know what happened. Let me try to bring the YouTube feed back. That one got knocked off. Okay, YouTube is back. Sorry about that. So anyway, that's just my general feeling that something is not right. It just doesn't feel right. And when you have large companies making a lot of money here, a lot of profit, but it's all being propped up by the government that's in the middle, it doesn't feel right. Should the government be propping us up from both ends, supply and demand side, then it's just fake. There's nothing real that we're living through. So, moving on to the portfolio, portfolio update, not much to report there because it's just 1 week, so all the numbers are exactly the same. The low yield portfolio is up last week 0.78%, medium yield is up 0.86%, and the high yield portfolio recovered a little bit nicely, up 4.6%. So since it's the first week of the year, it's the same number for both the week, the month, and the year. Dividends received last week. I say this week. I should put last week on the notes. Let's see here. We got Kimberly-Clark at $75.24. MDU Resources at $62.86. Community Trust Bancorp, $81.20. Genuine Parts, $65.20. Eastman Chemical at $69.16. Pepsi at $66.65. And SLR Investment Corp. at $215.66. Dividend events last week, Bank OZK, they announced their next dividend at 30 cents per share, 3.4% increase over their previous payout. Fidelity Freedom 2025 fund, their next dividend at 37 cents per share, bringing their fund's total payout over the last 12 months up 130%. Enterprise announced its next dividend of 46.5 cents per share, a 3.3% increase over their previous payout. And American Finance Trust, their next dividend of 21.25 cents per share is in line with their previous payout. This is a Podcasting 2.0 compatible podcast. That means if you're listening to this on a Podcasting 2.0 compatible app, you'll have access to transcripts, chapters, chapter images, and that accompany each episode. Please go to newpodcastapps.com to download and support and check out these new podcast apps. There's got to be something for everyone in that group to, you know, check out and see the different features that they have. Some don't support the value for value streaming model, which is this podcast is compatible with. Some do. So also, yeah, this is a value for value podcast where you can stream Bitcoin micropayments. And all you do is you open up the wallet in your favorite podcast app. If you go to, let's see, newpodcastapps.com, you can go and look through those and it'll tell you which ones are value for value enabled. If you heard that, that is the tiny dog with the bell. Let's see here. I am not a registered investment advisor, broker, or dealer. I may have positions in any financial instrument, product, or company mentioned on the website or on the podcast. Information provided on the website or the podcast is provided for information and entertainment purposes only and are not intended as advice or recommendation or an offer or solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security or financial instrument. All opinions are based upon sources believed to be accurate and are provided in good faith. No warranty, representation, or guarantee expressed or implied is made to the accuracy of the information contained herein. Please contact an investment professional if you have any questions regarding an investment. That's all. I've run out of news. I've run out of everything. So that's it for this week. I'm going to try to put in some different features starting next week, you know, whether it's a company or maybe a list of companies. And I know I've talked about it before and I haven't quite pulled it off, but that's what I'm planning for next week. So hopefully I can get that done. And that's all there is for this week. So have a good week, everybody. And we will talk to you next time. Well, if I cue the music correctly. Here we go. All right. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.